Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Greetings, I'm Hercules Invictus. Thank you for joining me on Voice of Olympus here on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Athena will be joining us a bit later. She's off adventuring right now. But we'll get to our wonderful guest right away. Mirror Living is someone that I grew to respect greatly in Pennsylvania, where our paths first crossed. We spent countless hours exploring the mysteries of the universe and sharing of our journey. Mirror Living was a master of technology, at least compared to me. So he opened my eyes to the many possibilities of lending my voice to the virtual world. And for that, I'm phenomenally grateful. He is one of the sacred keepers of the Oliphant Mystery, of which we will learn more about a little bit later. So without further ado, I welcome you, Mirror Living.
Hello. Thank you.
How are you, my friend?
Thank you. I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm doing very well also. We're getting ready to launch our first spin-off show, The Pride of Olympus, which will be something a bit different than what we're currently doing or that we've ever done before. So I'm really looking forward to the challenge of doing that. And I'll be asking you to join me on that adventure, but we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. So let's rewind a little bit to you and your journey. Now, you have always identified very closely with the Pleiadians. What
yeah.
does that mean exactly to you?
Well, the Pleiadians, when I first started getting into the spiritual journey, which has gone on now for 17 years, I think, what I'm calculating.
Wow.
Yeah, like heavy, heavy research, I would say 17 years. It started a little bit before that, but when I first got into spirituality and things of that nature, Pleiadians showed up in different areas in my life. And when I started my journey in the spiritual journey was, my goal was basically everything that was out there in our history, the unknown, unexplainable, all those things, they had to have a point where Christ connected somehow. That was my goal. That was my goal. And it took me into very, very far reaches of different areas that I never expected.
Even to Mount Olympus, yes.
Even to Mount Olympus, yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Yes, to Mount Olympus.
And Pleiadians were one of those areas when I started reading about the Pleiadians, and I found that they, you know, talked about Jesus Christ and things of that nature and the Christ consciousness and things of that nature. I was intrigued, you know, and then let's go into them real quick. They're mostly known for feelings,
The Pleiadians?
Emotions. I'm sorry?
The Pleiadians?
Yeah, yeah. They're really known for feelings, emotions, kind of like intuition, things of that nature. And I found, you know, because I've read a lot of channel books and things of that nature, and I always found like they were kind of the most neutral, calm, you know, here's the information, here's what happened to your planet, and here's some suggestions to help you become the human you need to be, you know? And so they discussed the whole idea of the inner kind of being and everything, and that they were like kind of living within or something to that degree, and I still haven't really been able to get my head around it, but they opened my mind to that, and I liked it. I was like, okay, that's a lot more comforting, you know, than to channel or something outside of, you know, the human being. You know, I don't know, I could get my head around a little bit more of, oh, it's inside us. Okay, well, I live here right now anyway, so let's see what's going on inside, you know, my soul, my spirit, whatever it is. So
that's a very interesting approach. And just to tie it into Olympus here a little bit, because that's what I represent and that's what I'm attuned to. In Greek lore, the Pleiades are the daughters of the Titan Atlas, who's one of the kings of Atlantis.
Okay.
So the connection between Atlantis and the Pleiades is one of ascension, because the Pleiades are in the fixed sky. They're in the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And the path of ascension takes somebody from the earth onto the fixed sky, the heavens, through the planetary spheres. So the Pleiades in Atlantean are the path of ascension of the Atlanteans. So to me and my Olympian mission, that has a great importance just on that fact alone. And in the mythos that has grown around the Pleiadians in modern times, that aspect of it isn't really gone into all that much. But the fact that some of the Olympians that we know of in mythology were Pleiadians, and they incurred a karma by presenting themselves as gods to the people of that era and taking a little bit of advantage, and that their current workings with humanity are partly to get rid of some of that karma and to dispel some of the things they did back then. Some of them were the best of intentions, I might add, but that they're connected with us in that way as well. What mythos of the Pleiadians are you tapped into, and which of the mythos spoke to your soul so much that it became part of your spiritual journey?
Well, one of the things they discuss at great length is definitely what you mentioned about being our, I believe some of them claim that they were, you know, the beginning of the hybrids, which I believe, if you look into it, I think it was around Atlantis is when that all started. And definitely correcting the karma. You know, I know what you're talking about there. I have heard that. And that was another thing I appreciated, too, was them be like, yeah, we messed up, and we're trying to right that wrong. So one of the things I found interesting was that there was this book, Revelation of the Magi. And apparently there's a document, and this is recent. I think last year I read it. I found this out and it intrigued me. So there was this document that actually exists, and it's called the Revelation of the Magi, the same Magi that has to do with Jesus. And they were saying how everyone thought Magi was from Persia. Well, supposedly the accounts in the Bible and everything else don't really talk correctly about it, all right? So supposedly in this book or this manuscript, it said that they came from kind of another world, another land. I found that intriguing. And so I started doing some research, and then I found that there could be a tie that they were, or that Jesus was a Pleiadian. Okay, and so that even more intrigued me. I'd have to do research to find that stuff that I found. What I was going to say is it all has to do with the stars, okay? And what's funny about that, too, is I did research into the inner realms that we're talking about. Remember, I was saying how they were living within us and all that stuff?
Yes.
And I found earlier, before I found this manuscript, you know, I didn't find the manuscript. It's a book about the manuscript. But anyway, I found earlier, probably 10 years ago or whatever, that there was a connection to Persia or Magi or people who were looking into that metaphysicality, that kind of theme, and they actually did look within themselves to find the outward reflection, hence the whole mirror living. But the interesting thing was about the Pleiadians also connected with that thing too. So here you have this revelation also kind of connecting once again to this Persia metaphysics area of the world. And I just found it really, really interesting. So that really spoke to me, you know, because like I said, I've been kind of led by the cosmic Christ, if you will, or Christ in general. And this is helping me understand things. And I'm trying to figure out really, really good, strong tie with the Pleiadians and my journey recently with Christ leading me and everything. And I think it has to do with memory, because if you read a lot of the channel books, it's all about the past, and it talks about what they did and the different lands that existed and all those things. But if you look at Gnostics, the Gnostics are all about the inner knowledge. So I think that may be where it ties in, you know, because the Pleiadians are all about inner work, you know, and yes. So are the Gnostics. That's just kind of something I came up to.
Well, the Gnostics believed in a non-material Christ. They believed that the story of the incarnated Christ was false, that it was allegorical, and not something to be taken literally. They also believed in the archons, who were the gods, or their take on the gods. And the archons were not good in their eyes. And the leader of the archons, who was the Jehovah of the Old Testament, was conceived as a demon who had trapped souls here on earth and was tormenting them. So the Gnostics did have that view of things, and much of what they said was interesting, and much of what they said I found through my personal experience was false, but I've enjoyed exploring the views of the Gnostics as well. Now, you and I have had many conversations about Christ and Jesus over the years, and as far as I'm concerned, he's been a god in Greece for over two millennia, so he's a Greek god, and he's one of the many gods that have blessed Greece during its sojourn through the ages. But what does it mean to you, Jesus Christ? What does he or the principle mean? Before you answer that, I just want folks to know that might find my statement very surprising, is that in the early part of the Common Era, or the AD, the word Christ was written in three different ways in Greece, and each way it was written had a different meaning. So Christos with an ita, it looks like a little H except for the longness is on one of the legs rather than the top, it meant a good person. So if you were civic-minded and you belong to a lot of the fraternities, like I belong to the Rotary Club or the Elks or any one of a number of those type of clubs, and you help your community, you were a Christos, you were Christ. And a lot of tombstones from the time, you know, will say, you know, Yanni Christ and Pavlos Christ and, you know, whatever the names, because that was one level of being a Christ. The other way of spelling it was with an epsilon iota or an EI. and that meant an oracle or someone who spoke for the gods. So if someone was connected to heaven and they were channeling information, as we call them now, they were Christs, you know, oracular Christs. And then the last spelling of Christos or Christ is with a yota or an I, and this means more of what we currently believe the term to mean, which is anointed and somehow messianic, a divine king, and so forth. So in terms of the Greek understanding of Christ, you can look at it as a Christian, you could look at it as a pagan, you could look at it as a scholar and an atheist. It doesn't really matter. These are just different ways of looking at that particular concept. And the concept that won out brought Greek orthodoxy to the Greek lands and a change in the religion of the people. But what does it mean to mirror living, to be a follower of Christ?
Well, recently, which me and you have talked about, recently I was basically, you know, I was in a situation, I felt that it was just a very, very difficult, challenging time, and I prayed, and next you know, I was freed, okay, when
yes.
I prayed to Christ. So what that did for me was I had to sit there and reflect, pun intended, okay, but to reflect on...
What else would mirror living be doing?
I had to reflect on my entire journey. You know, I had to reflect on everything that I've studied and researched and how this one principle freed me. You know, that it was a very rational kind of epiphany type of moment, while at the same time the most peace I ever experienced in my life. So it took me to a place where I said, okay, now how can I look into this and understand how this even happened, you know? And so what I'm brought to is, one, I believe mirror living is actually what I've been meaning to represent, and I don't know if I've done my job as mirror living or not, but regardless, what I've been meaning, my intention behind it was to be that, you know, the same type of person that Christ-like person, a good person, a true person, you know, and reflect that for other people to see as an example as well. So what I'm left with, though, is like, okay, what I want to know what Jesus learned, one. I want to know, you know, what he, where he went to learn it, and I want to understand what the disciples or anything else, you know, I want to understand the full thing. So I went into the Gnostics, and like you said, you are 100% correct. There are things that definitely are not 100% for what I'm going for or don't seem right. And then there are other things that are really, really powerfully right, you know, as far as my own experience and comparing my experience to theirs. What's interesting, more or less for this this account, me talking to you, is recently I've found Pythagoras as a very strong component of almost a similar type of person as Jesus was. Of course, you have the Nicaea, you know, council, and you have the whole, you know, you have all that. And I'm not an idiot. I get it. You know, I get all that, and I'm forced to look at that as well. So I'm going into more of like, okay, so if the stories were all tied together, blah, 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 where's the power coming from? Where is this ability to save or help or make people good? How about that? Let's really strip it down and say, where is this ability to do that? Now, I believe in God, okay? So somehow this made it a little bit simpler to be in a personal relationship with God. So what I found is that knowledge is one, but like you were saying, Christ is really a term anyway. It means anointed as well. So I kind of look at it as like the true self. So beyond ego, and you can't get beyond ego until you really surrender or sacrifice who you think you are to become who you were meant to be. And I think it may be as simple as that. And
that
knowing
that's an excellent
humans,
point. That's an excellent point. And I explained to a lot of people, they believe that my being Hercules is an ego thing. And not that I don't have a healthy ego, but it's actually a sacrifice. It's my higher self that has been with me since my earliest memories and is still here very strong. It's who I truly am. So you sacrifice the smaller part of you, the socially created and programmed part of you, to the part of you that is immortal, that is timeless, that is connected with the heavens and with other worlds, and you operate from there as much as you're able, rather than operating from the social construct that is programmed into you when you're born into a society. So I hear what you're saying, and you said it very well.
Thank you. I mean, this is what I come to experience and what I've come to find through the Gnostics, through through Jesus' teachings, you know, because some of the teachings are fantastic, you know, like it said, you drink from my mouth and you become me and I you. Well, what does that mean? You know, it almost sounds like if you learn the knowledge that I'm teaching and you take it in within yourself, you become that knowledge, which both of you are now the same but different people, which is really the whole point, you know, I believe anyway. I don't believe we're put on this planet to look at one another and say, yeah, we're different, you know, and that's our specialness. I look at it as that's our specialness, and that is true, but there's a commonality that we need to find. You know, we're so separate and so different and trying to be different and trying to be bigger and better and bolder and whatever else that we're losing the commonality between the simplicity of life. You know, the simple joys and the pleasures and, like, those things are kind of getting more and more, you know, pushed to the side. And I truly believe, you know, you've mentioned the ascension. That was an issue for me, too, for a very long time, was the ascension. What does that mean when it comes to a spiritual path? What does it mean now to a Christ path? Well, I believe kind of what the Gnostics believe. I believe this world is an illusion, and I'm okay with saying that. I feel very comfortable saying that. However, I believe that once we find the real truth of ourselves and the real world that lives within ourselves, then the world around us is going to change, because you're finding the true essence of what we're all a part of. And think about it. How many people do you know in a time, these times, with technology being so prevalent and forced down our throat, how many people do you know that are sitting around, you know, really thinking who they are without their ego getting involved? You know,
that's
how many people are really thinking about life?
Because I know lots of people. I just, by virtue of my own path, I meet a disproportionately huge number of people who are like you, like me, like Athena, like a lot of my friends who do. Yeah, we live here and we enjoy here, but are aware of this bigger dimension and are open to exploring it. Whether through philosophy, through dreams, through meditation, contemplation, asking questions. So I understand what you're saying, but I've been blessed with not having to deal with being in a place with, you know, where a lot of people are people I can't relate to. I'm very blessed in that there's lots of people I can relate to and talk about these things, and I do talk about these things often, as you well know.
That is unusual, though.
It is unusual.
Usually,
I'm very blessed.
Usually people are kind of
Yeah, Athena's here. She's joined us.
I know. That's great.
Welcome,
Athena.
She was going to be part of the Keepers of the Elephant Mystery, but she's part of this part of the show, too. Now, what does God mean to you? Because, again, I think the Tower of Babel story is one of the most important in the Old Testament, in that what causes us to think of ourselves as different and, you know, to start judging other people is the fact that we think they're talking about something different when actually they're talking about the same thing we're talking about, but using different terminology or a different point of view. So I try very much to get people to say what they mean. So I have no doubt that you are attuned to God because I know you. And, you know, this has been a theme of yours for very many years and part of who you are and what you're doing. But for folks who don't know, what does it mean to you to be attuned to God, one with God?
All right. To be attuned to God, well, talking about the Bible, the Tower of Babel, I mean, it's a great point, and it's a beautiful symbol for, you know, where I think a lot of people are in the world today. You know, lost in translation. We're lost in translation. The reason we're lost in translation, I was lost for a little bit too, is because we're looking outside. We're looking for answers outside. We depend, almost 100% on answers that we get from either other people or our technology, which is like another person. So it's like we don't sit. Oh, I'm sorry. That's ignorant of me. I can't say everyone. I'm saying a very large portion of humanity at this point don't sit around and really kind of bounce ideas off themselves to know, is this right, is this wrong? And I feel when it comes to God, God really kind of helps with that. God kind of removes certain things so you don't have to figure it out 100%. God wants you to figure it out 100%, in my opinion. That's the whole point of life. The experience of emotions and feelings and ideas and thoughts and all that stuff, that's a beautiful gift. It's when those things own us, when they take over and they enslave us, and then next you know, work enslaves you or society enslaves you, and then it's just worse and worse and worse. But when you can kind of, you know, steer your own ship and then say, all right, God, help guide me while I'm steering this ship so I really don't have to hit any rocks. And then that's what it is. God's a support system. You know, it's everyone's going around. Man, I keep saying I always do this. I apologize. A lot of people go around and they like to say, like, you're God, we're God. We just have to open ourselves up. We have to wake our God up. Come on. Okay, so now everyone is God. Now what? Now where's the whole beauty of it? You know, like, there's a poetic, artistic beauty to, I believe, the true essence of God. And the mystery is what kind of helps that unfold. You know, it's not supposed to be a mystery where it's fear-based, which is another realm that gets thrown in our face as well. It's an unfolding, just like a flower blooms. It's the same type of thing. You can equate that to the lotus flower if you like, but I think most people are striving for the lotus flower to bloom, which is the third eye and all those things. And it's like, I feel in my gut, my heart, my soul, that's not why we're here. We're not here just to become these gods on this planet. It doesn't make sense. You know, we're here to have a fellowship of humanity, and the next thing you know, God is with us. Does that make sense?
And on that weighty pronouncement, and if we are what we see, you are indeed an artistic and beautiful person, because this is what you're seeing in code. And sharing with us. Before we go to mid-show break and then the Oliphant Mystery, I would like to invite you to be part of the crew of the Pride of Olympus. The Pride of Olympus is our new show. It's actually our Merkaba, but we're going to translate it into a show. And we're going to be exploring ascension, more or less, and a handful of other things. And since you speak so eloquently for the Pleiades and the Cosmic Christ, I would like to invite you to be our voice for the Pleiades and the Cosmic Christ as we explore the path of human evolution, also known as ascension and apotheosis. On a personal ego level, this will give us more of an opportunity to hang out, so I would greatly enjoy that as well. So what say you, Mirror Living?
It'd be an honor and a pleasure, and I will do the best that I can for everyone fake and with God's guidance.
And that will be more than sufficient. I thank you. We are going to go now to song break, and I'm going to play Becca Kelso's Odyssey because it's the Odyssey, and how could I not play the Odyssey? until we come back, everybody enjoy, and we'll be back in 5 minutes with Mirror Living and the prophet of Oliphant, John Peruca.
Fight, oh, and stay alone. Uh-oh. You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Greetings, I am back. This is Hercules.
And Athena.
And this is the Voice of Olympus. And we are talking to Mirror Living, who is now part of the crew of the Pride of Olympus, and the prophet of Oliphant himself, the one, the only, John Peruca. Welcome back, Mira Living, and welcome back, John Peruca. How are you?
Okay, fine. I'm pretty
greetings.
Good.
Doing good.
We're going to talk about portals tonight?
Today we're going to talk about portals, because when we were investigating the Oliphant mystery, when we first met you, you had told me that Oliphant is a portal to other places,
yeah.
And
yeah.
There was a negative portal that wasn't that far from Oliphant. So because we're investigating portals here in New Jersey, and we know that there are portals in Pennsylvania because we live near one in Lakeville, I'd like you to explain the portals a little bit more for our audience.
Well, I'm starting with a radio program. This host of this radio program always kept seeing the number 111 around. You hear me?
Uh-huh.
111. And that's actually the top of Pascal's triangle, 111. And he says he saw it on like license plates, on the television. He saw it when he gets, say, he go and buy something, it was always 111, $1.11, you know what I mean? And he didn't know. Yeah, he didn't know what it meant, you know what I mean? So one day this woman calls up and she says, I know what the 111 stands for. And he says, what? And she says, it's when man learns the secrets of the universe. You know what I mean? And so I just heard that, you know what I mean? And maybe a couple of days later or a week later, I called up one of the leading UFO researchers. And he's well known. He's all over the television. And I told him about Oliphant, but he never came to investigate it. But he gave me a very important clue. He said that the ancient Hebrews and the ancient Egyptians combined their mathematical system with their alphabet. And I said, that's a great idea. Maybe I'll try that myself. You know what I mean? I did it. And then I discovered a lot of different things, crazy things. And in other words, A equals 1, B equals 2, C equals 3. So I tried, eventually I tried Oliphant. Okay, O is 15th letter, L is 12, Y is 25. It adds up to 111, believe it or not.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So how did we get from there to the portals?
Pardon me?
How did we get from the synchronicity of 111 to Oliphant being a portal to elsewhere?
Well, here's what happened. She called up, and I saw the 111. It's in my name, too, the 111. You know what I mean?
John Peruca?
And, I'll answer that question as I go into it. So one night, I'm on top of my roof, reading the paper at night, and I saw mm-hmm. a light going from east to west. And it wasn't a meteor, because the meteors travel pretty fast. And it wasn't an airplane, because I could tell airplanes with the lights and everything. And it went
okay.
into this over Oliphant and exploded, like a flash of light, tremendous flash of light. And I didn't see anything drive. Maybe I thought it was an airplane crash or something. But I didn't see anything fall. So I didn't know what it was, so I forgot about it. And about 2 months later, the same woman calls up, and she says that when a UFO goes through a portal or a door, you know what I mean, it explodes into a flash of light. In other words, I saw a UFO go through the door, an Oliphant, right above us. And that's where the portal begins, you know what I mean? When I, and it's mentioned in the Bible. Portals are mentioned in the Bible as wormholes.
Okay.
And,
now, you had told me that it was your belief that the portal near Oliphant is connected to the angelic realms, whereas the other portal that is near Oliphant is connected to some darker places. Are there religious type of experiences that happen in Oliphant?
The one that was reported in the newspaper was in Peckville, which is right next to Oliphant. You know what I mean? About 100 yards from 200-300 yards from Oliphant, and I went to see it. It was reported some woman saw. She said she saw a apparition or something, a biblical apparition inside a garage or something. You know what I mean? And there was a lot of people there. It was in the papers. So I went to see it, and there was some kind of door, like you say, a portal, you know what I mean? But and it was a negative portal. It's to me, anyway. And so they had the portal I saw, it was above Oliphant, the churches, you know what I mean? And that's probably like the positive portal. And down below, the one that reported by Peckville in the papers was a negative portal, I think, anyway.
You also got the negative portal, too?
Pardon me?
Can you tell us about the negative portal so we can contrast it? Because the portal that we had in Lakeville was to the elemental realms, and that was phenomenally clear. My wife described it as a lazy Susan that reached into different dimensions because it seemed that under different conditions you get different types of elemental spirits or nature spirits or fairies, as they're sometimes called. And sometimes these things that came through, they felt bestial and mindless, and other times they had very high spirituality and very high mentation, but not of a human type. You knew right away you weren't dealing with a typical human. So everything was very elemental, so I think that we could safely assume, and we lived near there, and we're exploring the types of experiences people were having in the area, and they too were very elemental. So we can assume that that portal there was a portal to the elemental realms. So in Oliphant, you're saying that there are angelic and religious type of experiences people were having. And then in the other portal in the nearby area, and again, these are all not that far from each other, relatively. They're all northeastern Pennsylvania. There were more diabolic type of happenings. And we had people who used to come to our store that we had there, the Barbarian Bazaar, and they reinforced some of what you were saying because they were sharing stories of possessions and hauntings and weird psychological and crime things going on in the area. So weird lights and so forth. UFOs, of course, are common to all of these worlds. So where the UFOs are isn't really a good indicator of what type of world you're dealing with through the portal, because as you said, they use the portals for transportation. But what were the darker manifestations as contrasted to the lighter ones that you got in Oliphant?
I think the one in Peckville was somehow connected to the underground, you know what I mean? The underneath the world. Because what people reported, they said they saw like broncos walking on two legs, things like that.
Horses?
Little devils or something, spirits, evil spirits, you know what I mean? And I think it was like the negative portal. But the one above me in Oliphant, above the churches, I think that was a positive. Because, you know why? My mother before she died, she was put in a nursing home in Carpendale. And this man, he came from, he was a believer in Mary at Medjugorje in Yugoslavia.
Yes.
And I met him. It was planned. I think everything's planned. Anyway, I talked to him, and I told him about Oliphant, and I talked to him about a door we're looking for in Oliphant, you know what I mean? And I told him about that UFO I saw. And the woman who said that when a UFO goes through the door, you get a tremendous flash of light. But you know what he did? He gave me two pictures. One of Mary, the Virgin Mary, and there was nothing. It was on top of a mountain near a cross. And there was nothing there when you saw it, you know what I mean? But when they developed the picture, she appeared on the picture. So that
awesome.
Was one picture. Yeah, but the next picture was even more fantastic. He gave me a picture of a door. But I can't say it's over Oliphant. There's no proof of it, you know what I mean? But it was a door behind it, was the sun and clouds, very beautiful blue sky. You know what I mean? And how would he know that I was looking for a door? It's impossible. Mm. But the mother God would know. Yeah, she would know. So I got the picture. I got the picture of the Virgin Mary in like a ghost-like form. A beautiful, she's beautiful. And I got a picture of a door. And you know, it's a mystery because there was no way he knew I was looking for a door.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's hard to explain, right?
Let me bring in the anchor.
Okay.
Because we talked about, me and John talked about at length about the anchor and the Andreessen affair. You know, they discussed an anchor in the book, and there's some areas in the book that connect to maybe the anchor in Olsen. But more interesting was when I was looking up on a hunch if anchors had any representation when Christian symbolism. Sure enough, it did. And it said that it was one of the oldest symbols that they used when they were being persecuted. And they would use the anchor. And it would stand for, and I bring this up for a reason, basically it said, supposedly when we fell away from God, we fell away from our being. So it represented that we are sojourners in this world of cruelty and that our true home, the ocean floor beneath the ocean of this world, remember that goes into the inner thing, lies behind the veil of a temple or a world of unending world creating, which is love. And Christ is the anchor to this ultimate reality. So, okay, it may have something to do with, like, the portal of maybe inner dimension. Like we talked about earlier, maybe the true self, you know, knowing our true self is easier to come across when you're around elephants. And so the portal of understanding and the real kingdom that we're, you know, hidden, that's hidden from us behind the veil, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there for you guys. And
that's an excellent way of looking at it.
And the anchor, you know, connects to the Ankh with Egyptian, and there's plenty of Egyptian things to go around where it comes to elephant, you know. So,
well,
and the Tau cross also connects to the anchor because they also use the anchor once in a while as a cross, you know, and so, you know, you have the Tau cross, and that was Greek as well, right? Greek was,
yes,
the Tau cross? Yeah. So there's a nice little, like, interweaving here, you know, that may have something to do with this. Now, I did research and found that there is this very powerful Scottish influence that helped make Olsen what it is, and I think it's been hidden. Not many people know about the Scottish influence. It's pretty wild.
Can you research the Scottish influence and report back on it once a month to see where your researchers are taking you?
I have tons of information that I can definitely gather, organize, and yes, absolutely.
So we'll make it a point each episode to focus on a different aspect of the Olsen mystery. Now, I must let our audience know that when I first met John Peruca, it was back when we had the Regional Folklore Society of Northeastern Pennsylvania. And we struck up a chat, and John told me about Oliphant, and he told me that Oliphant means light of Olympus. And then he proceeded to talk about churches that were in the formation of the constellation Orion. So these, for me, were resonance points. Of course, how can I not look into something called the Light of Olympus? And how can I not investigate something that has to do with Orion? Because of Orion is like a proto-Hercules. So John Admiuk there. Now, I must also warn those who are thinking of joining us on this adventure that when you look at the Oliphant mystery, it's very misleading in that it's easy to dismiss any of the individual things that you're looking at. But once you see the amount of synchronicities tied into Oliphant. It's like those pictures that are made up of other pictures where you can't see them if you're close, but if you're far, you can see that they make a picture and it's very clear to see. The Oliphant mystery is much the same way. Whatever force gave us the mystery at Oliphant made it so that people who weren't really interested would become discouraged and kind of leave it. And you need a certain type of dedication to see through the initial fuzziness and see how everything fits together. So I'm really glad that now there's four of us, and hopefully soon there'll be more of us. So, John, how many people would you like to gather to safeguard the mystery and explore the mystery of Oliphant?
Oh, I wish they came and investigated. It's not the number of people, it's the number of people come and investigate.
Well, all three of us have been there with you to Oliphant.
Yeah, I know. You checked it out, but others don't. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people don't believe in the supernatural. Anyway, I got a story about the connecting the portals to the anchor. You want to hear that one?
Awesome. Share it with us.
Okay. John mentioned the Andreessen affair.
Mm-hmm.
Betty Andreessen, she was taken she was captured by a UFO, and under hypnosis, they took her to talk to God. You know what I mean? And it's in a book. I mean, John read it, and she asked him what was the purpose, and he says, "I'm using you to show the world," or something like that. Well, on the way back, she mentioned the anchor 6 times. She says this town, there's an anchor there, and there's a door in the town. And she's not talking about a living room door or something like that, you know what I mean? She was talking about a door into another world. And she mentioned the anchor. Now, how many towns as spooky as Oliphant is, you know, they designed after ancient Egypt, and there's an anchor in front of there. And she says there's a door into that world. So she sent me her one of her representatives from her internet site, you know what I mean? And
yes.
She came and she checked it out because they're looking for a door too, you know what I mean? I was looking for a door and they were looking for the door that she mentioned in the book. And I claim it's an Oliphant. And here's
so, do you have that quote in the book? Because I think next time it'd be interesting to hear what Mira Living has to say about the Scottish elements that are hidden.
Yeah, I got a little story. Let me finish this. Let me finish this. She mentioned the anchor in this town, and she says there's a door in this town. It has to be Oliphant. She sent a representative, and there was a few weird things that happened, and I told John about that. Well, the representative was an Oliphant. Well, anyway, here's another story about the anchor.
Okay.
The anchor comes from the Wasp ship or something like that, Wasp. And when she mentioned it, I decided to check. And I found out it's from the Wasp carrier. And it actually came, and I lived in New York City, in Brooklyn. And my father worked in the New York Naval Shipyard. And he helped refurbish that, the Wasp. And I was on a Wasp when I was 10 years old, or something like that, you know what I mean? I was climbing all over it. And it followed, that anchor followed me and my mother to Oliphant. And the anchor, when she in the book, she mentions a phoenix bird. And the anchor looks like a bird, if you think about it. The two anchors, you know what I mean? They're like the wings of a bird. And
okay.
She mentioned the phoenix bird that guards heaven. Before she was allowed to cross over on the other side of the phoenix bird, she would be in heaven talking to God, you know. That's not allowed. God was like a big light she saw, and she heard a big voice. But she wasn't allowed to go in that past the phoenix bird. The phoenix bird protected the door to heaven. And that's what the anchor does in Oliphant. Before you go into Oliphant, there's that anchor. And I was on that anchor when I was a kid. How do you explain that?
Now I'm going to dig out my copies of the Andreessen Affair and all the subsequent books that came out, The Watchers and so forth. Let's see what we can find. Okay, that'll be my homework assignment between now and next time we get together. And Athena, being the excellent web researcher that she is, she will be helping me with that research. And we have Mirror Living presenting the Scottish elements. And how about if you share next time Oliphant's ties with ancient Egypt? How does that sound?
Yeah, okay, I'll do that. That's easy.
Good. And John Peruca, the prophet of Oliphant, has laid down a condition. If you wish to join the sacred keepers of the Oliphant mystery, you have to actually voyage to Oliphant and explore the town on your own or in the company of one of us. So there you go. We have our first condition for joining our number. Any other conditions you care to set down, O prophet of Oliphant?
No, I'll go with that. Oliphant ties with ancient Egypt. I'll do some work
awesome.
On that. Yeah.
And Mirror Living, are there any conditions that you would like to set down for people who want to join us?
I think we should take a treat for lunch.
Okay, that's a good thing. You must treat for lunch in addition to going to Oliphant. I have a condition that basically you work with us on the websites and all the other things that will be putting together. We don't want any rogue researchers in Oliphant.
Like demon hunters?
Yeah. Mirror Living, how about you? Do you have any conditions you'd like to lay down?
You put me on the spot. I don't know.
well, if you think of any, between now and next time, we'll get them out there. And I would like now to officially announce that Oliphant is part of our Temenos. In Greek, the word temenos means sacred space, which is the same as the term nemeton to the Celts. And we've already had one episode on Celto-Greek spirituality. We'll have many more and tie all those things together much better than they're currently tied. But Oliphant is now officially part of our celestial kingdom. So I welcome Oliphant, and I welcome its prophet, and I welcome the protector of its lore officially to our temenos.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Hercules.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Now, how can people access the Oliphant website that you've created, Mirror Living?
I will have to go and look at it. It's on Yola, and I gave you the website. I haven't been on it in so long, I can't remember the...
I will post it on Facebook. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, I'll post it on Facebook, and if you friend me on Facebook or visit my timeline, you'll have the information by tomorrow.
There you go.
And John Peruca, how can folks get in touch with you and learn more about you?
Well, John tells me about
it. Oh, John will tell him.
Oh, okay. So
his friend John, yeah.
So his friend John will tell him. Okay, great. I would like to thank again both of you for being on, and I look forward to having you on again. I wish you both safe journeys, and thank you for being on The Voice of Olympus.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, honor, and blessings to you as well. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mirror Living.
I'm going to put you both in the chat room since where you guys can chat, and we'll join you there after the show finishes.
Sounds good.
Okay, let me see. Our Oracle has announced no CERN updates, so alas, there are none that I can share with you right now.
All right, so in that case, if you want more information on Hercules and Athena, visit our website at www.herculesinvictus.net. For contact and community, visit us on Facebook at Hercules Invictus, Mythic Atlantis, Voice of Olympus, and we're also available for Olympian workshops, mythic activities, epic special events, and appearances.
And currently, we have two that are continuously running. We have at the Amber Dragon, we have our series on the seven heavens, and this is part instruction, part meditation, part guided visualization. It's a really interesting new way that I'm communicating information. And at the Creskill Public Library, once a month, we have the Center for the Study of Living Myth, where we share information and welcome folks to share their take on the information. And this serves as a safe place where you can come and share some of your unusual experiences and see that you're not alone, that even here in Bergen County, there are plenty of people experiencing very many strange things. I thank you all again for joining us, and I look forward to connecting with you again next week. This is Hercules saying adios.
And Athena Victory saying good night, folks.
And I guess I'll say it in Greek, too. Yassas.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.
Mirror living.